From Genetic Engineering and Biotechnology News, this is the GenCast Network. Bringing you compelling and in-depth interviews with the biotech industry's leading researchers, newsmakers, and thought leaders. This week on the GenCast Network, Dr. Michael Rose from the University of California, Irvine, is interviewed by Gen's editor-in-chief John Sterling on the topic, Can Science Really Slow Down the Aging Process?
Dr. Michael Rose is an evolutionary biologist and a professor in the School of Biological Sciences at the University of California, Irvine. An expert on the biology of aging, Dr. Rose made headlines in the 1970s by using selective breeding to develop a line of fruit flies called Methuselah flies. They live significantly longer than ordinary fruit flies. Dr. Rose also works on the application of fruit fly research to human aging and chronic disease. During next month's GTC BioConference, New Applications in Aging Research, which will be held in San Diego on January 7th and 8th, Dr. Rose will give a talk entitled, From Tiny Methuselahs to Healthy Patients. Dr. Rose, why do we age?
Humans age like other vertebrates age because natural selection progressively gives up on us as we get older and older during our adulthood.
What are the key physiological mechanisms responsible for aging, and how do they impact the aging process?
I think in general we're not very expert on what the key physiological mechanisms are with respect to aging in general. A lot of evolutionary research suggests that the physiological mechanisms responsible for aging will be as diverse as the physiology by which different living things live their lives. So, for example, trees undergo aging processes. Not all trees, but many trees do. And we don't expect those to be exactly the same physiological processes as we observe in animals. And even more profoundly, there are animals and plants which do not undergo aging at all, which indicates that whatever the physiological mechanisms responsible for aging are, they are certainly not universal and not even universal among the kinds of organisms that we are, which is eukaryote animals.
In the foreword to your book, The Long Tomorrow, How Advances in Evolutionary Biology Can Help Us Postpone Aging, Dr. Andrew Weil writes that he is convinced that aging and age-related diseases are not synonymous. What do you think he meant by that, and do you agree with him?
I never know what people mean when they say things like that. Let me offer you a possible meaning, and then I will try to indicate my degree of agreement with this concept. One way you can think of aging physiologically is that it's a process of degeneration, degradation, or decay, disintegration. And one way you can think of age-related disease, like your greater likelihood of having a heart attack as you get older, or stroke, or cancer, is that it's like a car accident. So if you accept those two definitions, we can ask, are car accidents usually, sometimes, or always due to the progressive deterioration of our cars with age? And I think the answer is yes, sometimes, but they are different. So in this context, I guess I agree with Andrew Weil that those two things are not synonymous. You can die of an age-related disease condition. It is related to your underlying process of physiological disintegration, but those two things are not exactly the same thing.
Can science and medicine actually help slow down the aging process and extend the human lifespan? If so, how?
Well, since my whole career has been based on my success in slowing down aging processes, at least in fruit flies, which might not seem too exciting to people who want help with their medical conditions, but it is exciting to us biologists. So science can slow down the aging process. We've shown that in simple experimental organisms, and the science that underlies that, which is evolutionary genetics, certainly applies to humans. But what people like myself have shown can be done scientifically is not a method that you would directly want to apply to humans. You know, I have no interest in changing the course of human evolution at all, and anybody who thinks I do have that interest is in error. But so the tricky question becomes, how do we go from the basic science successes that have been achieved in slowing down the aging process to actually doing something for the human lifespan? And I think in modern jargon, that would be more appropriately rendered as the human health span. That is, how can we improve the human health span, increase its duration, increase our ability to lead functional lives? That, I think, really is the purpose of the conference that GTC Bio is putting on. How can we make this very important connection between breakthrough science that has been achieved with respect to the control of the aging process in simple organisms to actual medical interventions that will help increase the quality of people's lives?
You're a specialist in evolutionary biology. How can advances in evolutionary biology help us postpone or learn more about postponing aging?
Well, if I may be a little, in a sense, evasive or take a sidestep on that question, what I would like to say is if you were to ask a nuclear physicist in the 1930s, how Professor Einstein could your understanding of nuclear physics possibly lead us to the development of new forms of energy and perhaps devastating weapons, I think the fair answer nuclear physicists could give you is that while indeed the chemists are very good at making small explosions, the nuclear physicists have the prospect of making very big explosions indeed. And that's because at that time, in the 1930s, in the 20th century, physicists had made major breakthroughs in their understanding of the relationship between matter and energy. In a parallel way, I have argued, evolutionary biologists actually understand the true foundations of aging, which are to be found, in our opinion, in the falling away of natural selection with adult age. That is something we can control, and from controlling it, we can basically reveal what's going on physiologically with mechanisms of aging, and demonstrably, we can develop interventions based on that evolutionary insight. And so I know this is very counterintuitive because you think, wow, you know, aging, that's a medical problem. What is medicine based on? It's based on cell biology and physiology. What does that have to do with evolution? Well, in the same sense, if you were a munitions expert in the 1930s, you'd say, well, what have physicists ever done to build a useful bomb? That's done by chemists using very fast rates of chemical reactions that generate explosions. The nuclear physicists will never have anything to contribute. And then 1945 proves that point of view is wrong. And that's my basic point of view on what evolutionary biologists can do for the study of and intervention into the aging process.
Much has been written about caloric restriction and postponing aging, and the work of Dr. Roy Welford immediately comes to mind. But you and John Phelan authored an article 2 years ago entitled Why Dietary Restriction Substantially Increases Longevity in Animal Models but Won't in Humans. Why not?
The key word that you quoted there is substantially. I do think that dietary restriction tends to increase human longevity and even human health span in some respects, but I don't think it will do so substantially. And let me first explain why this is a very live topic. If we were rodents, there is no question that the key to substantially extending our lifespan in the immediate future would be caloric restriction, reducing our intake of calories each day. Because rodents and some other animals have a tremendous flexibility in terms of their use of calories for fueling their reproductive activities, and that massive flexibility that they have for retuning their reproductive activities in turn affects the aging process, basically because if you massively reproduce, the general biological rule is you tend to kill yourself off pretty fast. Something I sometimes call the Jimi Hendrix effect when I'm teaching undergraduates, although I think now a lot of the undergraduates don't know who Jimi Hendrix was. But anyway, other organisms are like rodents. So, for example, nematodes, which are a very common research organism in the study of aging, also show a tremendous ability to modulate their reproductive activity to basically arrest development in a non-reproductive state and so on. And they, like rodents, show a tremendous capacity to have their aging pattern retuned by retuning reproduction. Fruit flies and humans on the other hand, don't show as dramatic an ability to retune their reproductive activity and thus to retune their aging pattern. And in the paper with Jay Phelan, what we showed was that if you look at it quantitatively and you quantitatively model what we know in a few isolated cases, mostly Japanese data, about the relationship between human intake and human reproduction and human survival capacities, the evidence is overwhelmingly that we're not an organism that is very responsive to diet in terms of how we live our lives. It is true, and we, in this paper that you have mentioned, we look at the case of, for example, sumo wrestlers who eat massive quantities of food and very clearly die much younger because of that. But actually, the response pattern of a sumo wrestler is an order of magnitude smaller than the pattern of your typical laboratory rodent to fluctuations in its diet, its total caloric intake. So it's really a scientific argument which is couched in terms of magnitudes. It is true that if you are absolutely devoted to living another 18 to perhaps 36 months longer, and you greatly reduce your caloric intake while making sure that you're not exposed to infectious disease, which is a very big stipulation, you will probably be able to live that 18 to 36 months longer by restricting your calories. But you will not, N-O-T not, be able to live 30 or 40 or 50% longer the way rodents can when we do that to them.
In the Marianne Lieber Journal, Rejuvenation Research, which was formerly known as the Journal of Anti-Aging Medicine, you were quoted as saying that there's a serious, hardcore, mathematical, scientific theory that underlies aging. You went on to note that this point is almost always overlooked in articles about aging. Can you tell us more about this hardcore scientific theory underlying aging, and why do you believe it is seldom discussed?
Well, what a great question. Well, one of the historical phenomena of the development of science over the last 500 years is that in many ways physics grew out of the work of mathematicians like Galileo and Newton. So right from the very start, the study of physics has been dominated by a mathematical theory and developments of mathematical theory, and that has continued right up to our present time. Biology has grown out of the activities of, firstly, natural historians, people who studied plants and animals, and secondly, the activities of medical physicians. And that historical tradition is very non-mathematical. And biology and the whole tradition of how we train biologists has stayed very non-mathematical. And the irony is that the field of biology needs mathematics just as much as the field of physics. And that means that even though mathematically inclined biologists have developed a fantastic theory for the evolution and machinery of aging, and this wasn't my work. This was the work of a bunch of English scientists with names like Medawar, Hamilton, and Charlesworth. And Charlesworth was my advisor for my PhD research. They've developed this wonderful mathematical theory, but, of course, most biologists are totally ill-equipped to use this theory. That was my lucky break because my whole career has been based on the fact that I started out as a theoretician and became an experimentalist. My experiments are driven, defined, and shaped by my use of the mathematical theory that, unfortunately, most of my colleagues in biology are either ill-trained or ill-disposed to use. And it doesn't really tell you what that theory is. As it happens, I just published this year, 2007, a review article on the history of this theory. Basically, the theory that underlies the evolution of aging turns out to be very strikingly parallel to Einstein's special theory of relativity for the relationship between velocity, mass, and energy of a moving object. It's not the same precise equations, but it's got very similar properties which determine the tuning of the force of natural selection. And the basic point of this theory is that as an adult organism gets older, it benefits less and less from the action of natural selection. So a simple way to describe the situation is to say that we're healthy because when we're young, because we have adaptation tuned up, it's strong, and we lose our health as we get older because adaptation is tuned down progressively more and more. And that's the key to understanding aging, and it's also the key to manipulating aging in a laboratory, to understanding the impact of particular genetic interventions on aging, to understanding the physiology by which you can intervene and control aging. It's the key to the whole thing. And unfortunately, this key is mathematical, and most biologists simply are not mathematical.
My final question is, I've read where some researchers believe that humans may eventually live to be 150 years old or more. Is this in the realm of science or science fiction?
Well, there's so much evidence indicating that this is what's going to happen. Some of it's very, very quantitative evidence. I was recently at a meeting where a demographer showed data which basically showed that the human lifespan has been steadily increasing, not since 1950, not since 1900, but since the 1850s. And this has been a very straightforward, relatively linear, unchanging process over this entire period of time. You know, world wars have happened. You've had epidemics of flu, the whole thing. But the basic limits of human lifespan have been steadily progressing. So right now, I think that anybody who says that we will not reach 150-year lifespans has some explaining to do. The overwhelming body of evidence shows that we are very likely to continue to extend human lifespan century after century.
I'm John Sterling. Thanks for listening. Now we'd like your opinion on this week's podcast. Please go to www.genengnews.com/blog and give us your thoughts. We would also appreciate it if you would answer the following question. Would you be willing to significantly alter your eating habits and practice caloric restriction if it would allow you to live an extra 1, 2, or 3 years? Why or why not? Bye for now.
To learn more about topics discussed in this GenCast, or to listen to previous GenCasts, visit our website at www.genengnews.com. New GenCasts are posted every week, Thursday, 5 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. For the Gen Publishing editorial staff, I'm Jonathan Ellinghouse saying thanks for listening, and be sure to tune in again next week to the GenCast Network.